You are listening to KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White. And the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors will have a new member joining the team this coming year when 4th District Representative Lynn Compton attends her first official meeting on January the 5th. The 4th District includes Nipomo, Oceano, Arroyo Grande, and edges up to the border with the Santa Barbara County line along Highway 166. Compton, a longtime Nipomo resident, takes over for the outgoing Karen Ray, who was appointed to the seat last year by Governor Jerry Brown. Compton's win tips the scales of the board's makeup to one that will now consist of 3 Republicans and 2 Democrats. Lynn Compton joins us in studio today to talk about her plans for the 4th District and how she'll work with the other supervisors on countywide issues. Welcome to KCBX and congratulations on your victory last month.
Thank you, Randall.
Now, considering the shift in ideologies in the board's makeup, how do you feel partisanship will come to play in decisions that you'll make?
Well, it is a nonpartisan position, as you know. I think it'll just shift back probably to what it's always been in the past. The 4th District is a relatively conservative district, always has been, except for this latest appointment. So I think the 4th District, anyway, will continue to go forward and be similar to what we've had in the past. I don't know who will be the swing vote. I don't necessarily think people have said, I'll be the swing vote. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think I'll probably be pretty conservative on fiscal issues. On, politically, I'm very libertarian on a lot of issues. But, it's a rural area. It's a conservative base. And I think I'll probably be pretty similar to that type of base that we've had in the past.
And for people who don't remember, Karen Ray took over for Paul Teixeira,
who was more
conservative as well, sadly died of a heart attack.
He did.
I think it was June of last year.
Right. He served a little less than half his term, I think it was. And then there was a vacancy for quite a while, and then the governor appointed. And I did interview for the appointment. There were 5 of us, I think, that went to Sacramento to interview. We don't really know who the other people were unless they had come out and said that they had interviewed up there. So three other people came forward and said they interviewed. I interviewed. We don't know who the 5th person was, but I believe I was the only Republican that interviewed up there. And I really didn't think he would appoint me. And when we had our first interview with the governor, they asked us, if you are not appointed, will you run? And it was my understanding that they only wanted people to interview who were interested in running at a later point. And I told them at that time, if I'm not appointed, I will run. So we waited for the governor out of respect to the governor. We knew he would make the appointment, and we waited until he appointed Ms. Ray. And then after that, we came out and said, we're going to gear up and we're going to run at that point.
Now, you live in Nipomo, and you have for a long time.
We've been there about 21 years. We moved up from Santa Maria. When I moved to California about 25 years ago, I lived in Sacramento and Rocklin and met my husband through a business that we were both in, and got married and moved down to Santa Maria. And then we sold our house and we built in Nipomo 20 years ago. It was a little over 20 years ago. Nipomo was pretty rural. It's not quite so rural now, but we want to keep our rural feel down there. But yeah, before the Vons, before all the traffic on Taft and everything.
Now, Nipomo makes headlines quite a bit because of the air quality coming off of the dunes and also the Phillips 66 plant that is there. So this is right in the heart of your district, right in the heart of where you live.
It is.
I'm curious, with Phillips' plan to put a rail extension that would increase the amount of crude that is shipped to the area and increase the amount that's processed there as well. I know in January it will go before the Planning Commission.
Correct.
At some point it will make it to the Board of Supervisors. How would you
Correct.
Vote on that?
Well, I think it's January 29th that it goes to the Planning Commission. And I am in the process right now of appointing a Planning Commissioner. So I hope to have somebody in place by the time that hearing comes up. And I'll follow it, of course, very carefully. People were able to submit their comments. I think the comment period closed just a couple days ago to the county for the revised draft EIR. So I will read all those comments. During the first round, there were over 800 comments. And I read all of those. I read the first EIR. And, I mean, until the facts are in, I think it's not prudent for anybody to make a decision on it. I know I believe everybody gets their day in court, and so you want to hear both sides. I've told people all along, I have to represent the people. If you have dead people, it doesn't, you want healthy people in your community. I have a daughter that has asthma, so it was very severe at one time when she was born. It's gotten a little bit better. She's 13, it's got a little bit better, but I mean, we can't even go outside if someone's burning wood with her. So, I mean, I'm concerned about air quality probably more so than most because it affects our family. So that's very important to me. But until all the facts are in, I don't, just don't think it's prudent to make a decision. And I said that all along. We had seven debates, and I said that in every one of the debates. I do tell people, though, if I mean, I've talked to hundreds of people about the specifically the Phillips 66 and the Dunes, too. And there are people on all ends of the spectrum with that. There are some people that want it. There are people specifically in Trilogy more so because it's right in their backyard that don't want it. There are people in the middle. But there are people on the extremes on both sides. There are some people that want Phillips shut down and out of there. And I've said from the beginning of this race, if you're looking for a candidate at that time when I was a candidate, if you're looking for a candidate that wants Phillips closed down, I'm not one of those. I'm not that person. Whether the rail spur goes through or not, still yet to be decided on that issue. But if you're looking for someone that wants Phillips closed down, I'm not. I mean, it provides over 200 jobs, local, good-paying jobs, and I think that's important to the economy. So with regard to the spur itself, until all the comments are in, the comment period is closed now, I do believe it'll go to the Board of Supervisors because I think whichever way the decision goes, there's going to be a side that's unhappy with that, and they'll probably, you know, take it further. So, but you have to look at both sides, and everybody deserves their day in court, and that's kind of how I feel about it. And it's interesting because Karen pretty much said the same thing as she ran the race too. The only one in during the primary, the only candidate that really came out in a very outspoken way opposed to the spur was Mike Bird. And he was criticized for doing that, for coming out so outspoken before all the facts were heard. But interestingly enough, she and I have pretty much maintained, you know, all the facts need to come in before we make a decision. But I mean, suffice it to say, you have to have healthy people, and you have to look at people's, you know, health before anything else.
Do you feel the facts are in yet when it comes to the Dunes? Where do you feel that stands? The most recent numbers show that the mitigation efforts, the hay bales and some of the fencing that went in really didn't move
the
needle.
I haven't read that report. And that came out right before we just got back last night from spending 2 weeks back in Chicago. So I haven't read that report yet. I know that came out. And I want to delve into that and read that first. You know, there's a court order right now. So certain individuals have to participate and do the things that are required and mandated by the court order. And the Dunes, you know, has to put up the bales. They have to put up the fencing. They have to do things to lower the amount of days that they're out of compliance. And that's the law. They have to do that. So it's my hope all sides can work together to lower it and make it more healthy. But I think there's a misconception for people to believe that you can live. I mean, the mesa was formed by sand. If you live in Napomo, we happen to be on the more clay side of Napomo, but a lot of the mesa was formed with sand. And there's blowing sand. There's things that can be done, and I think should be done, to mitigate that. Trees that were taken down. Why were over 600 acres of eucalyptus trees taken down? I mean, that would help prevent and prevent the sand from blowing and the dust and particle matter number 10. So I think everybody needs to work together to achieve the common goal, which is lowering the poor air quality days that we have along the coast. And you have a lot of retired people that are, you know, compromised due to age or health, whatever. So, I mean, we want them to be healthy.
The Napomo Mesa area, much of the 4th District, gets their water from groundwater, do they not, mm-hmm. from the Santa Maria 100% Valley?
100% from groundwater. Yeah, mm-hmm. Napomo is almost completely dependent on groundwater.
So, as you know, groundwater has been a top concern for the Board of Supervisors over the past year, mm-hmm. primarily with the focus being in the Paso Robles area. What are your thoughts on groundwater management?
Well, it's a different, in my opinion, it's a different situation with what's happening in Paso versus what's happening down by us. We're part of an adjudicated basin in Napomo. So there's different things that can be done in areas that aren't adjudicated versus areas that are adjudicated. Paso is not adjudicated right now. It's probably coming to that. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. But the state is mandating that areas that are in certain severity levels in the basin manage their groundwater. I do think we have a groundwater problem. When we moved to Napomo 20 years ago, people were hauling water in. I'm disenchanted that nothing's been done over these years with this problem, and now all of a sudden it's a crisis. So why haven't we done anything up until this point? I am not an advocate of the thinking, I guess, the proposed thinking that we can save our way to prosperity with water. I don't think that's the case. I think we have to come up with alternate solutions. Do I think we should conserve? Of course I think we should conserve. But I don't think that's going to get us there. My concern is, what if we're in a, 20-year long-term drought, which has happened before in California history. We're not going to just be able to cut back on watering our lawn and doing things like that and get us to where we need to go. So I'm an advocate for desal. The largest desal plant is coming online in down by San Diego, Carlsbad, in the country. I don't think it's something that just Napomo could do or Oceano could do. I think coastal communities could probably band together and do it. I believe we've depleted our groundwater because we haven't replenished it, and we've taken out dams. Klamath River, they're taking out a big dam right now. They've taken out all these dams where we've had a reliable water supply. Two-thirds of the water supply in California comes north of Sacramento, and it's very reliable. When you start taking out dams up there, you're not recharging that basin, so the water's going right out to the ocean. So I am an advocate of trying to recharge that basin, maybe look at desal along the coast for coastal communities. The Central Valley, you know, they need the water for agriculture. Maybe the Central Valley could use the groundwater. But we've got too many people depending on the groundwater now. It's being depleted. It's not being replenished. We're not doing anything to recharge the basin. We're not putting in dams and things where the water, when it does rain, can go back into the groundwater supply. We're letting it go out to the ocean. So, I mean, it's a very complicated situation. I just question why nothing has been done over all these years. And now all of a sudden, a year ago, they implemented strategies with the urgency ordinance. So it's been almost a year in place now. And I don't think that's corrected the problem any. I still think we have a problem. It really didn't do anything. Everybody said it was a timeout. It was a timeout. Well, it wasn't a timeout. Nothing has changed. We're still in a pretty dire strait situation with our groundwater.
There's another option just shy of desalination, I guess, and that is treating brackish water mm-hmm. the way they will be doing in Cambria.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that we'll still see how the Coastal Commission and,
That's one of the big problems, the Coastal Commission, with getting a desal plant in too. So, that's a big hurdle. But I advocate for things like that too. And when you look at other countries desert type countries, I mean, they are predominantly desal. So it's feasible, it's possible to do. When you look at desal, the two biggest obstacles to overcome are the cost of electricity, and just the technology has changed so much over the years. So, and the Coastal Commission, getting over that hurdle with the Coastal Commission. But the technology has changed. Remember Santa Barbara put in a plant years ago? There are new technologies now where there's two different methods where they to get to desal. One of them is, I think it's a distillation method, and the other is pushing the water through like a mesh membrane.
Reverse osmosis.
Yeah. So when they change the technology and improve that membrane and less energy is required, it's less expensive to do. And they have. There are a couple companies out now that have changed that membrane. It's more permeable, less energy is required. So, I mean, that's a plus. The technology is changing. It's just the Coastal Commission, too, is a hurdle to get over. So I just think we're not going to get ourselves there by just saving our way and everybody cutting back and raising rates so people cut back to punish them. Sure, we should conserve, but I think we have to look at other methods. Because my concern is this isn't a one-year drought. This is, if it's a 20-year drought, what are we going to do? If you have no water in your home is valueless. So, I mean, we need to protect everybody's property rights and make sure they have water. And agriculture is huge in California. I mean, do we really want to get rid of all agriculture in this state? I don't think we do. So I think we need to come up with some solutions to turn that situation around. But I think you're fighting a lot of different aspects. You're fighting environmental groups. You're fighting in the Central Valley fish. You're fighting things like that, that we all need to come together and be less rigid with our ideology and find a solution, because California's going to have no value if we don't come to some solution amongst all of us to do it. And they are pushing things down from Sacramento and mandating if you're in a certain type of basin, you have to have plans in place by certain years, and there's cutoffs and timeframes. So if a county doesn't want to go along with it, they're going to be forced to go along with it, basically.
We're speaking with 4th District Supervisor, San Luis Obispo County 4th District Supervisor-elect Lynn Compton. She joins the team on January 5th of this coming year, and I'm curious if you have any 4th District-specific projects or issues that you hope to bring to the supervisors to help solve or create or whatever it might be, but something that's 4th District-focused that you're hoping to rally for or against.
Well, we have a lot of 4th District issues that are kind of hotbed issues right now. You mentioned it earlier, the rail spur. So that's a big one coming up. In Wasna, there's a Porter Oil project that's been kind of controversial. We have Letitia Vineyard, who's proposed 102 homes to be developed. It seems like out of all the districts besides the Paso Water Basin, we have a lot of pretty controversial issues going on in our area. And then we're an adjudicated basin, as you know, because we talked about that too. So those are the issues that I'm going to get hit with right away when I get on the board. There's going to be a learning curve. I'm going to be, I'm sure, briefed on what the lawsuits are, you know. And there's things that if you attend the board meetings or watch them online, you're not privy to know. So I've already had a couple meetings, but there will be more after I'm sworn in. So I'll be privy to those. And there's things about these different proposals that the average person just isn't aware of going to the meeting. So I'm anxious to learn those before I make a decision on anything, because I think those will impact your decisions too. So those are the issues, which are a lot of issues going on in the 4th District right now.
Indeed.
That I think will be, first and foremost that we'll be working on. I think most of them come up within the first 6 months.
All right, Lynn Compton, Supervisor. Lynn Compton, best of luck with your upcoming stint on the Board of Supervisors. And you are listening to KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White.